1-866-922-4227. WBAI's partners will take all of your information and take care of the details. You can also visit WBAI.org and click on the Ways to Donate banner for more information. Again, that number is 1-866-WBAI-CAR. And then you can leave the lawn ornaments to Foxworthy and friends.
Sego, this is John Cain from Let's Talk. On Wednesday, June 28th at 7 p.m., I will be presenting Acts of Defiance at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. With what is becoming a global call to resist, it is important to revisit the bold demonstrations of resistance from the past. Acts of Defiance is a feature-length documentary that recounts the events that surrounded and led to the Mohawk resistance to Canadian government forces in the summer of 1990. You are invited to join me for the film and discussion Wednesday, June 28th, 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. There's no charge for the event, but donations for WBAI are encouraged and welcome. Yahweh.
On Saturday, June 24th, the People's Organization for Progress will be holding a march and rally for reparations in Newark, New Jersey, 12 noon in front of the Lincoln Monument on West Market Street. One of the core demands of the organization is reparations to all African Americans for centuries of enslavement and brutalization by the U.S. government. Most recently, the U.N. calls enslavement and colonialism crimes against humanity and urged the U.S. to address these crimes against African people with reparatory justice. So come out on Saturday, June 24th, 12 noon, Newark, New Jersey, at the Lincoln statue on West Market Street. Reparations are just and reparations are due. For more info, please call 973-801-0001.
Hi, I'm Lisa Garr, host of The Aware Show, and I'd like to let you know that we have moved to 1 o'clock on Thursdays at WBAI. So for a dose of awareness, inspiration, motivation, and science, listen to The Aware Show, 1 o'clock on Thursdays.
And you're attuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. It's coming up on 12:03. It's been a long time since we played some Waiting for Mike music, but we have some for you this morning.
Something's gone wrong again. and you're tuned. Listener-sponsored radio. WBAI. The name of the show. Mondays, midnight. Chris, imagine if we played music like this throughout the show every week. It'd be a different kind of show. Are you there, Chris? Chris, are you there? As I said, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM. The name of the show.
Is that Night Shift?
So you're there.
Oh, you can...
You can bring the ship closer.
I'm trying to bring the ship closer. About that.
So what if we played music like this every week, Chris? We just did the show with music like this. It would be a different kind of show.
Yeah, different kind of show anyway.
But this is Night Shift. So, Chris, you talk about this sometimes, and I'm usually reluctant to do it, but... sometimes we do a whole show, or at least part of a show, where we just talk about what we've been doing with our lives. And I know that's one of your favorite things.
It is. I was just talking about that today.
And just you and me here talking.
Yeah.
And maybe a female may wander into the show. But, Chris, I do want to share with you my adventures last week.
I can't see.
What did you say?
I can't see.
You can't see it? You said you can't wait.
I can't wait. I can't wait. You know, is that the thing from Apocalypse Now that the helicopter sound?
No, but it does sound like it, doesn't it?
Saigon. I'm still in Saigon. Still in Saigon. Bring the ship closer, Mike. So, your adventure.
So, Chris, so before I tell you about my adventures, like, first of all, I do, you know, we're just so you know here on the show, I do have some life is like science fiction that's just, you know, life really is like science fiction. Do want to talk not so much about politics, but just the temperature of the world today and where we're headed and how, you know, we've been saying life is like science fiction even before everybody realized and in many ways accepted that life is like science fiction because it completely is. So the show really, in some ways, is not as surreal because life has become more surreal. Do you concur, Chris?
Yeah.
So I say that to say that, so I have my Pentagon story. I went to the Pentagon on Friday, had a meeting at the Pentagon.
What?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It's a whole, yes. But I will tell you, I want to hear about, how was your week?
I can't even fathom whatever I did. You know, my life rolls into itself and just keeps rolling on down the hill. But going to the Pentagon, now that's an adventure. That's
Have no idea. You have no idea. You know, everything about the story, and again, it's not so much that happened, but what did happen.
Oh now I understand the picture you sent me.
Yes.
The picture you sent me.
Yes, I did. Yes.
I thought it was really funny because somebody was hiding behind the podium and I just thought you were just like, this is how life is. Now you can't even get into the Pentagon. That's what I thought when you sent me that picture.
No. But we'll get to that. Anyway, the name of the show is Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent and I'm here with Chris Taylor.
Yes, hello.
So, is your season, like, are we in the middle of your season, or is your season over? Like, what's the deal with you? Because, you know, you were, for about 2 months now, you've been off, you know.
No, I just had a break. I'm in a week break here, and then it steps back up again next week.
Well, for those who are listening who don't know what I'm talking about, Chris is one of those pickers. He's one of those people like what you see on American Pickers, where he treasure hunts. He does like he's like a land pirate. And he's got the temperature of things and, you know, while we are in the process here in the present of obliterating truth and history and rewriting history, artifacts from the past have great value.
This is true. But I've been hitting a lot of estate sales and stuff and, I've recently acquired some interesting early hunting photographs from the Adirondacks.
Early hunting what?
Early hunting photographs of
The Adirondacks.
Hunting camp from the Adirondacks. Yeah, it's pretty historic. It shows people and how they were camping and living in the Adirondacks back in 1910.
What's your thought on hunting in general? Do you think it should be just outlawed completely?
It's not something that I do. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's...
Do you think it should be legal still?
I've hit enough deers with cars, so I don't know whether or not the hunting of deer keeps the population of that count if you don't have car accidents.
If you're killing them with the car, then why do you need to hunt them?
Yeah, but you can killed in the process.
I was kidding.
You can lose some loved ones because of, you know, somebody you love is driving and they hit a deer. And, you know.
No, I'm sure. So deers are a big.
They can be something. It's hard. It's a little. And plus, there's the deer tick thing where there's a high rate of ticks.
Well, that's humans trying to live among the deer. Do the deer die from the deer ticks?
No, but they carry the ticks.
Well, they're deer.
Found a lot of stuff. I know.
Well, too bad. Too bad. You shouldn't be living up there next to the deer. Leave the deer alone.
Let me tell you something, dude. I would say that almost probably 3 out of 5 people that I meet, or maybe 4 out of people that I meet now, have
hit deer?
Have been bit by a tick now.
Bit by a tick. Have you been bitten by a tick?
Yes. Yes.
I really? Really? Now, I heard that it can cause brain damage.
It's something that once you, if you, even if you get treated, you have to get treated pretty quickly, but if for some reason you don't get treated quickly, you could be on antibiotics for a year, year and a half you can't really cure it once you get Lyme disease, you have it for life.
No, I know. I have, you remember Bill Lee?
Yes.
He got bit by a deer tick and then he got what they call, well, I don't know if I'm going to give out all that, but let's just say it led to another complication, you know.
It does. It manifests itself in all different forms
yes.
Memory loss and
so neuro. Hunt them down. Hunt them and kill them. Is that what you're saying?
The what?
Hunt the deer down.
Well, I'm not sure, but I just, and then, you know, I know people that live off of eating venison and deer and stuff. So I don't know. The hunting thing, it's just that's their lifestyle and, you know, that leads to the whole gun thing, and then we get into a whole.
What about big game hunting? Like when it's not to eat, it's just trophy hunting.
Yeah, I don't really believe in that.
You don't believe that? You think it should be illegal worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems kind of
a waste.
Yeah, you know, animals are beautiful things.
So you heard that they didn't give the monkey his just due.
What?
No, really, they were pushing for monkeys to have rights, civil rights, and it would almost got passed, but they said no. It was called the Cornelius Bill. No, it was not, but this is a serious thing. They really tried to get monkeys human rights, essentially, and they said no, they're monkeys. Specific chimpanzees. You did not know this, really? Joe? Yes, this is.
No, life I didn't. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things I know, but there's a lot of things I don't.
Ah.
And that's something I don't know.
Well, that is a fact, and I didn't bring the story because I thought everybody knew. Let me see if I hear this.
Okay. This is not a Planet of the Apes thing. This is not.
No, well, you see, back in 2015, this judge gave a chimpanzee human rights. It was like one specific. What's that?
Was that Cornelius who they gave?
That was not Cornelius. That was not Cornelius. It was Caesar. No, but
it was Caesar.
exactly.
There it is.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to see if I can find the story for you. Just to you.
Dr. Zayas.
Yeah. Well, this has been back and forth for a while. Okay. Here we go. This is from June 8th. Chimpanzees do not have same legal rights as humans. U.S. court rules. Court in New York rules in case of caged adult male chimps, Tommy and Kiko, that there's no precedent for apes being considered people. Two chimpanzees that were caught in a trailer lot and at a primate sanctuary don't have the legal rights of people in New York, and a Port's court has ruled. Non-Human Rights Project attorney Steve Wise, now check that out, non-human rights, there we go, life is like science fiction, had argued the appeals court in March that adult male chimps Tommy and Kiko should be granted a writ of habeas corpus for which people relates to whether someone is being unlawfully detained or imprisoned and should be taken to see a judge. Wise argued that the chimps, which were caged in a trailer lot in Gloversville outside Albany. Do you know where Gloversville is, Chris? It's not too far.
I sure do know where Gloversville is. Right. It's about 20 minutes from me.
There you go. Up in Gloversville outside Albany at a primate sanctuary in Niagara Falls. Should be moved to a large outdoor sanctuary in Florida. The chimpanzees can walk upright and use sticks and stones as tools and help gather food. They're considered to be the closest living relatives of humans. Some have been taught to speak simple human sign language. But the state Supreme Court's appellate division is in a ruling that affirmed a lower court's decision said there was no legal precedent for chimpanzees being considered people, and their cognitive capabilities didn't mean they could be held legally accountable for their actions. Petitioner does not suggest that any chimpanzee charged with a crime in New York could be deemed fit to proceed. What do you think there, Chris?
Wow.
So It says that, that he said, while Wise's avowed mission is certainly laudable, determining legal rights of animals was better suited to legislators. In other words, he was like, I'm not going to touch this. So it said, for 2,000 years, all non-human animals have been legal things who lack the capacity for any legal rights. This is not going to change without a struggle. Look what happened to black people in America. No, he didn't say that. He said the Non-Human Rights Project based in Coral Springs, Florida.
What are you talking about?
Just throwing that in there. People being things, lives as things that you can own. The Non-Human Rights Project based in Coral Springs, Florida started off its litigation over rights of chimps in 2013, where lawsuits were filed on behalf of Kiko in state Supreme Court in Niagara Falls and Tommy Fulton County. Those cases were unsuccessful. So it sounds like Kiko needs a new lawyer.
Wow.
So that's kind of heavy. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I think animals need the rights that they have gotten for cruelty against them and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if I would.
You're not sure? But, well, they could take over the planet. I mean, I'm going to see War of the Planet of the Apes on Wednesday. You should come down. I know you can't come down, but you should come down. It looks good. Okay. You should come on down. And you know what else we're going to do at some point? I'm going to tell my Pentagon story, but also we're going to take some calls.
Yes, I want to get your Pentagon story.
We're going to take some calls. 347-335-0818. Some people can call and join in and experience life like science fiction with us. Sorry, I got a little pulled into the vortex there.
You are in the vortex.
Yes. What was the line from Zardoz? You're crossing the something. Warning, you are crossing the vortex. I don't know if you remember that. All right. What's that?
I don't remember that.
Yes, I remember various.
But the Pentagon thing has just got me so intrigued.
Okay. All right. I have to get the proper Pentagon music. Let me get the Pentagon music here. The whole experience is mind-blowing for me. That's all I'll say.
mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing to me. It was, I think perhaps I am naive about certain things, you know, and didn't understand certain things. But, you know, the things that I learned, they're, it's not like they're so huge. They're small, but it just says so much to me. So
really vaguely, you realize that, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I am. I am specifically because I'm going to get to it. But just letting you know, I'm just trying to find the proper music here. Let me see.
Oh, is this kind of right. Music?
Yeah. I need to. Oh, yeah, here, look what I got here for you. Here you go. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Yeah. Feeling comes over you in the middle of the night, and you gotta keep listening until it gets light. This is what it's all about, Kench. All right, it's a Night Shift rap song. But no, that's not the music I'm using.
You know, yeah, why don't you... Oh, yeah, this is Pentagon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait.
So I pull up. No, that's not it. All right, let me see. I was looking at, like, I need some Tangerine Dream. That's what I really need, something like that. I don't think that's the right
thing. Well, yeah, that's you in the Bronx Zoo.
What's that?
It's you at the Bronx Zoo. It's like...
Okay, this is good enough. So, here, first of all, I had a... no, this is not. This is not what I want this to...
No, dude, just get on with the story. Everybody's just... They're writing me. People are like...
Is everybody are they writing in?
Yeah, they're writing. Get on with the story. Careful.
So here's the deal. So I have a meeting at the Pentagon on Friday morning. So Thursday evening, I'm taking the train, the Amtrak down to, you know, I'm taking the Acela, you know, and I'm going down for, it's a movie. It's a movie project. I got hired to do the screenplay, and, you know, so they're paying for me to take the train down to DC. And so I settle into my seat and my laptop and everything. And then they start coming through the train with the bomb sniffing dogs. Now, I had no idea that Amtrak had bomb sniffing dogs. And I even asked the Amtrak guy, I was like, no, actually, I asked somebody at the Pentagon later on. So the bomb sniffing dogs, that was the first thing to get a sense that, like, wow, times have changed, Chris. I had no idea they had bomb-sniffing dogs on Amtrak. And, you know, I just want to pause to say that I really feel, you know, what happened at that concert in London and what's been going on and all the violence against Muslims and whatnot that's just, you know, happening in London and it's starting to happen here. But now, you know, once the idea gets out, once somebody does it, somebody else gets inspired to do something. And then somebody else sees that, and then they get inspired to do something. And eventually, it becomes... I don't know if you remember the movie Brazil. Do you remember Brazil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, you know, there's things going on all the time. And, you know, how safe can you ever be, you know? So anytime there's a large crowd of people, you know, whether it's a concert or an event, whatever it is, they're going to have increased security. So that means all concerts... pretty much worldwide, or at least in this country and in the major countries, are going to have more security. And that means the tickets are going to cost more. And, dude, they have bomb-sniffing dogs on Amtrak. So is that is it me, or is that kind of wild to you?
No, that's been standard procedure for a little while.
I didn't know that. All right, so we get to the Pentagon, and when you get to the Pentagon, now, first of all, to me, I'm like, wow, it's the Pentagon, you know? Nothing I ever thought I'd do, so, and I'm going down with, like, with, you know, these various military guys. Like one guy's the head of the Montford Point Marines, and another guy's the former head of the Montford Point Marines Association. And you know, and this is a film project that I'm working on about the first Black Marines. So we're going to meet a 3-star general, like the only Black 3-star general that there is, that there has ever been in the Marines. And so, so we get there, and you know, and I'm taking pictures because to me it's like, wow, you know, leading up to the Pentagon, which is this you know, this building I've only ever seen in movies. You know, I saw a movie tonight. I watched Transformers, and they had a shot at the Pentagon. You know, something's going on in the basement of the Pentagon. So I get there, and you know, you go in, and there, the first thing you see is no cameras. And you know, there's signs all over. So you go in, and there are guards, you know, with those automatic rifles all standing around and everything. And you go in, and you know, we're being escorted in with, you know, these, you know, one guy who works there and whatnot. And then I meet a guy who comes, who's part of our escort, and he's Pentagon police. There's a specific, he's an ex-Marine, but what he works for the police force, there's a specific police force just for the Pentagon. You know, and I asked him, I was like, how many are you? He says, I cannot say, you know, but there are a lot of us. I was like, okay, wow. So, it's interesting. So once we get inside the Pentagon, now here's what started to blow my mind. Inside the Pentagon, it's like a mall. It's like an airport. There's tons of stores. There's a Starbucks inside the Pentagon. They have their own jewelry stores. They have their own, there's optometries, Pentagon optometrists. I had no idea, and it is immense inside the Pentagon. And it literally looked, you know, it's like a shopping mall. And I didn't even know that you could go inside the Pentagon. I didn't know like it was something that you could go as like for a tour or any level of tourist or anything. I didn't know you could do that. Did you?
Yes, I did. Right, but go ahead.
I didn't know any of this. So we get in there, and you know, there's lots of security. You got to go through multiple checkpoints and scans, and you got to have a badge, and you have a certain color badge means that you got to be with certain police at a certain time, and it's got to be, and you can't just hold the badge, you got to have it, it's got to be put that badge on, sir, you know. So we get up, we go all the way up to, you know, the 3-star general, and you know, of course he's a character, and you know, it's all very, you know, and it's all kinds of, you know, other, you know, generals there, and it's kind of wild, you know, you're there, it's, you know, you've only seen this kind of thing in movies, you know, or at least I have anyway, not being in the military. So then interesting note, okay, first of all, whenever you go to you know, any major facility I've ever been to, even just a building, you know, there are monitors on each floor and in the offices. And so I'm in the office of a 3-star general, and generally a monitor in any kind of place is going to have a news channel on. You know, that's what they do. That's how you know what's going on in the world, is a news channel on. And here's my question to you. What channel do you think a 3-star general in the Pentagon would have on his monitor in the office, like the big office area, the common area where everybody's, you know, big, huge, everybody's got their offices. Mm-hmm. What channel do you think would be on? What's your guess?
CNN, probably.
See, that's what I would think. It was not. It was BBC.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so I thought that was an interesting note. Okay, so we you know, we had the meeting and everything. We, you know, videotape him and everything, and you know, we discuss all it, you know, the stuff that I need, you know, as a screenwriter, blah 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 blah. And so then we're leaving, and you know, we're deciding.
No, the reason why he may have had the BBC on was because of everything that happened a couple of days ago when you were there. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a terrorist attack in London, so that may be why he was monitoring BBC.
I could be. Yeah. I thought it was interesting though.
But so, go ahead.
So I say all that to say that, so we're getting ready to leave. And as we're leaving now, You know, coming in, you know, I had kind of taken a couple of surreptitious photos, you know, just to kind of like, you know, wow, you know. And I even posted on Facebook. I was like, hey, you know, like, interesting, you know, they're watching BBC news. And, you know, there's a Starbucks inside the Pentagon, you know. So, you know, this is all kind of wild to me. And, you know, people responding. And so then as I'm going, you know, we're going down and they're deciding where we're going to go have lunch. Because this is like an 8 o'clock in the morning meeting. And, well, it's a little early for lunch. Where are we going to go? We're going to stay in the building. We're staying out of the building. All right, so we're going to go out of the building. So as we're going out of the building, and again, it's a whole thing to get in. And it's like, wow, you just went through this whole experience. You've been to the Pentagon. And as I'm leaving, I turn around just out of habit to take a picture of me leaving. Like, stop right there, sir. What are you doing, sir? Da-da-da. Dude, they took my phone. They were like, okay. They surround me with these guys with the rifles out and everything. And my friends are like, and they're like, please stand aside. They push them all the way over to the side. Tell them to go get the car, you know, like, just go away. And they're like, da-da-da. And he's calling it. And then it's like, he's looking, show me this. Show me, is this an iPhone? Is it, yes. What, why are you taking the, and he's looking at the pictures and like, what are these pictures? I said, well, this is just, you know, coming up the, why would you take pictures of coming up in the entrance and everything? You know, just, it's the Pentagon. That seems suspicious to me, sir. What else do you have? Let me see the rest of these photos. And it's like, you know, now you're like, oh, snap. Okay. And he's like, you know. And then he's like, and I was like, well, do you want me to write? No,
don't do anything, sir.
And so I'm standing there with my phone in my hand, and I'm like thinking, okay, I still have photos up on Facebook, you know? And so they're like, do you have your license? Do you have your ID? And they take my license, and they take my license, and they go away. And they just wait here, sir. And they go away with my license. They're like, you know, in the back.
With your phone? They went away with your phone?
No, they went away just my, they just took my license, took my ID, and just went away. And I'm standing there with my phone. And then they bring out the guy, like the policeman I had gotten friendly with, the Pentagon policeman I had gotten friendly with before. And he's pretty calm. You know, he's like, yeah, they just got to check, you know, they got to check in your background and do a background check and check who you are, da, da, da. And, you know, and then they come out and they're like, all right. You know, you know, you hear them saying your name on the intercom to the guy with the rifle in his hand, and he's like, all right,
2001, 2003.
I'm like, what? You know, what in my mind? Like what? Like what? And so then they come over, and he's like, let me see the photos, and he's like, all right, I need you to delete each photo, delete. All right, He's like, he scans down the phone. You know, in an iPhone, you have recently deleted photos. So, and I had like 5,000 photos in here. He's like, you're going to have to delete that, sir. Sorry. Click. And then it's like, okay. And then they let me go. And then I debated for a minute. And then I look on Facebook, like all these people that responded. Somebody had already shared it, you know. So I had to delete the photos because I felt that it would be unwise to push my luck.
So thanks a lot for sending me that photo. I appreciated that. You like get me all involved.
There it your is.
Stupidity.
So
of getting, you know, apprehended at the Pentagon.
Apprehended at the Pentagon. I didn't even get to take that photo.
So you deleted 5,000 of your photos on top of
everything. Well, there were photos I had already deleted anyway that I, you know, obviously did not want.
So what did you learn about yourself from this experience?
Like, that I'm a fool. What do you think I learned? I learned that I'm a fool. You know, it was what was the foolish thing was, like I said, it was just pure reflex. You know, I had taken a couple of discreet photos and I probably would have, you know, gotten away with it and never even probably, you know, but who knows? Maybe I would have then ended up with some people at my door like, you got the Pentagon photos? You're the guy who took the Pentagon photos? You know. So, it was, you know, definitely a interesting adventure.
That, my friend, is scary.
So, There it is.
Man. And you know what's funny is that I know the really innocent, you know what I mean? Like, but nobody knows that. They just don't know you. But now they know everything about you.
Yes, they do. And now, who knows? Maybe I'm on some
and
list.
And now they know about me because you sent me that picture. See, it's the worst.
And why you pull me in? You know, and I had one friend, like, idiot that he is. I won't name names. One friend, like, I sent a picture of... I put up the picture of the Pentagon, right? Which, again, I didn't realize. And again, it was just a picture of the Starbucks and, like, the welcome desk, you know? It was nothing, you know, but who knows? I figured, let me not push my luck. And so I look at the one person wrote, did you tell him that you're there to give some hemlock tea to, you know, Mr. Orange or something stupid, some death threat to, you know, the president under a picture of the Pentagon on my Facebook page. Which I promptly deleted, but you know, that's social media. People are stupid.
No, I mean it's people take pictures in places that they're not supposed to.
I too am stupid.
Yes, but you know, unfortunately, man, we're in a state of
If they have their bomb sniffing dogs on the Amtrak.
The problem is,
how is it that you knew they had bombs every dog on the Amtrak?
Because of if you leave, let's say Albany, they have dogs as soon as you walk into the terminal.
No, I've seen dogs in a terminal. I've just never seen them on the trains.
Well,
but I guess you know,
usually
running to DC,
bag of people going up.
They walk them through the train. They were sniffing the bag, sniffing my bag.
Yeah. I mean, you're checking everybody gets on the train. It's the same. No way to get on the train.
Wow, well, this is just an extra layer. Then.
It's like 2 years ago. And then it goes at different levels. There's different levels of security.
Clearly.
But everything now is we're in a very, I mean, just like you said, any kind of a crowded situation, anything. It's get people there.
You break it up there, Chris.
Well, something that's happened in Paris to today.
Yeah, what happened in Paris today?
I guess the extremists.
All right, you're totally breaking up. Say that again.
An extremist drove his van, what was full of weapons and some kind of gas bomb or something, into the Paris police.
Really?
Yeah, and that was in the the Chems, CHAMPS, Chems something, one of the famous places in Paris. So I mean that happened in a couple hours ago, and there's just a lot of this heightened things, and you know, you don't know what's going to happen next anywhere, and it's. I don't know, the world is getting... It's there.
Well, the time now is 1 a.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. 99.5 FM. The name of the show.
Night Shift.
So
you know what I love? I sent you that picture of Sean Connery naked, and you had his picture already naked.
That's really not a picture. That was a doll, you fool.
You know, I know. Did you see that picture before?
Of course. Come on. I've seen the movie. That's Zardoz.
Oh.
That's why I said when I was playing the music, it was like, you know, warning, you are entering the something zone. It's from Zardoz.
So how do you think the new, what's the word on the new Blade Runner?
Well, you know, like, I like the director, Denis Villeneuve. I really did like his last film, and I've liked the films that he's made. I think he's a great filmmaker. I think he's a great science fiction filmmaker. I think he's interested in exploring the themes that only science fiction can explore on the level it does. You know, I think you know, if anybody could make a worthy sequel to Blade Runner, it would be him.
It'll be him.
Know? And, you know, that brings up my feelings about Blade Runner. I love Blade Runner. You know, I think it just, I think it works. I think it works on so many levels. I think visually, the music, the sound effects, you know, the pacing. I really enjoyed the movie. But I will tell you, the very first time I saw the movie in the theaters, I didn't like it. I particularly didn't like the ending. Okay. Now, having seen the film as many times as I have, having seen it without the narration, seen the director's cut without the narration, with the unicorn sequence and with a different ending and everything, I prefer the director's cut. I prefer the original vision of the film without the narration. I'm used to the narration because it was bad. It helped ruin the movie for me the first time I saw it. So I think Blade Runner is still, you know, a masterpiece. You know, it all comes down to the script, so I'm hoping it's good.
Now, I was reading today that they found Carrie Fisher, you know.
Yes, she had cocaine and heroin.
Cocaine and heroin and ecstasy.
And cocaine, heroin, and ecstasy.
Yeah, and other kind of opiates, just... Man, she must have been partying hardy.
Well, you know, she needed it to get through the day. I mean,
I know. I think the success came back to her. She just decided to relive it all again.
Maybe.
That's sad.
It is sad. I wish I had gotten to see one of her shows.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That probably would have been a different, you know.
Well, yeah, when she did the stage show, I would love to have seen that.
There's some kind of weird video of, like, 2 weeks before she died that somebody shot, like, on YouTube or something. Kind of private 5 minute video of her hanging out with a bunch of people. It's a little funny. Check. She was having a good time, even on the plane. But so what do you think about this Walmart, Whole Foods being bought by Amazon?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, and I wanted to bring a woman on, I had met at Fox News to talk about this. Maybe I mentioned this to you, but I think it's an interesting thing because, you know, we live in an age where brick and mortar stores have gone out of business or have dwindled, you know, particularly for video, books, records, things like that, those type of consumable entertainment, because of online. And so online retailers have supplanted brick and mortar. But brick and mortar now, you know, online retailers, you know, Amazon's opening up stores and you know, various, you know, online retailers will open up a store to, you know, to see what that's like. And the question is, can they do it? It's a smart move to buy something like Whole Foods, you know. There, I've read some interesting theories about it, you know. You know, at a certain point, all this, you know, messenger delivery, Amazon Prime, Amazon Now, you know, Uber Deliver, all this stuff, everything so you don't have to move. You know, still, you have to wait for something. And, you know, what if within an existing framework you could have stuff you ordered, you just pick it up and there it is.
Yeah, within 24 hours it'll be at, it's like the way the automotive stores work, where if you keep a part at AutoZone or something, it'll be delivered within the next day. And but also, you know, it may not come to fruition. It may just have been a whole publicity thing, because although they're doing a takeover bid, it could change. They said, you know, artists, the company also tried to usurp bid.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Amazon has already got a fairly healthy, you know, that Amazon Now where they deliver groceries for you. They have their own facility, but they have to use a couple outside vendors. And then locally in each city, I have to assume, you know, they have different vendors, different stores they work with. So if they own a chain, that just kind of takes care of that arm of the business and it can grow on its own. And conglomerates, super conglomerates, super, super conglomerates, mega conglomerates, that's just the way of the future. That's the way it is. When something gets so big that you can't stop it, and it can control the market, and it can charge you what you want.
They're going to change. They said they're going to get rid of their high-end brand of Hope.
Sure. They can have their Amazon brand of anything. If you've got the distribution network, you can have Amazon. I mean, they already make electronic equipment, you know, and wires and Amazon, whatever. Amazon, they have some name for it. But, you know, they've got the brand, and so if they can give you entertainment and food, and then, you know, they'll have houses, Amazon, real estate. I mean, it'd just be like, you know, what's the company? Not Toshiba, the other one. Samsung. Samsung's like a country, you know. Yeah. There's Samsung everything, you know.
Yes.
So there it is. What
could see if it could happen? They could easily just. I mean, with 451 stores so far of Whole Foods, that's a big network thing.
You're good to go.
You know, people, even if people pay for Prime, everybody always wants to save on shipping and handling. So now, instead of paying for shipping and handling, let's just say you don't have Prime, you just go pick up at the store the next day or 2 days.
Listen, if I were going to buy a corporation, I'd buy UPS.
Buy UPS?
Yeah.
Yeah. UPS. That would be the ultimate, wouldn't it?
Well, there it is. That's how the comic book industry destroyed itself back in the 90s.
Mm.
What they did is they Marvel and DC decided they wanted, you know, at the time there was at least not quite two dozen distributors. There was like at least 18 different comic book distributors. And what they did is they then decided they wanted to do their own distribution ultimately, and wiped out all the other distributors because they couldn't carry their stuff and they can only carry independent, and they dwindled down to nothing, and comic book stores that existed on things. So the whole comic business, they cannibalized the business, destroyed it. You know, there used to be comics that would sell 2 million copies, whatever. A best-selling comic today might sell 80,000 copies. That'd be a best-selling comic, you know, compared to runs of 2.5 million. It was crazy. But they destroyed that industry by being greedy and trying to control everything.
Speaking of comics, Suicide Squad, the first movie.
Yeah, there's only one.
I know. But they're working on a second. What's your review?
I thought it was fun. You know, I think that, you know, it was obvious they never thought they'd get Will Smith, so they had to kind of retool the script to give his character more depth and more importance. And, you know, I don't know that it necessarily helped the film to do that, to focus on his character. I mean, I like Will Smith and all that, but, you know, a little Will Smith can go a long way for me. And I think that, you know, what's his name had big shoes to fill as the Joker, and I think that you know, it's hard.
He's a little over the top.
Well, I think Joker is a over the top. Every actor that's ever played him does it over the top. But they just, you know, at the time before Heath Ledger did it, everybody was like, "Well, how's he going to beat Jack Nicholson?" You know, because Jack Nicholson had done such a good job. And before Jack Nicholson, you were like, "He's Cesar Romero," you know. So, you know, each actor's got to make it his own. I feel like he made some choices. I think, you know, credit to Heath Ledger and Chris Nolan. He kind of created, in some ways, a definitive Joker. you know, really, yes, he really did, you know, so much so that it still lingers in your mind, you know. I watched a trailer.
No, Lito is definitely.
I watched a trailer for Suicide Squad with my dad the other night on Father's Day, and he goes, "Oh, look, they had to create a character similar to the Joker for Batman to go up against." And I was like, "No, that is the Joker." So, I think so that's a factor. I think it was a little bit uneven too. I think it tried to do a lot. You know, we have to meet so many characters that we don't ever heard of, and a universe that's not really well defined beyond Superman and Batman. And so I thought it was.
I liked it. There was a lot going on, though.
There was a lot going on. I enjoyed it.
But it was the way it was presented and edited was interesting because it was in these like little truncate segments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you'd get these like 5 or 6 minute segments, you know, where you'd have a certain amount of action and a certain amount of plot evenly balanced. And it would be like, boom. Then it would be again and again. And I kind of thought it worked. I liked it. You know, I was surprised. I'm surprised that it made as much money as it made. Like $1 billion. But it just goes to show you that I don't know what a good movie is anymore.
Well, I mean, you liked it. So other people liked it too. I mean, I liked it. You know,
is it a billion-dollar film? I mean, is it? I don't know. Is that?
Listen, there are a lot of movies. You know, the last two Transformers movies made over $1 billion. So you know, neither of those were great movies. But I can't give a review yet because it's an embargo. I saw the new Transformers movie, but I can definitely say it's better than the last one.
There you go.
Well, I can say this. You know, Michael Bay had said that he would not, he wasn't going to do any more Transformer movies after the last one. And but then he decided to come back. And you have to assume he decided he wanted to come back with a bang. And, you know, he does make a certain kind of film, you know, he's good at what he does. And so there's got to be a reason. But again, I don't know if you know, you know, Kiva Goldsman, you know, led a writer's room for Paramount. You know, they brought in 12 writers and they plotted out the whole, you know, Hasbro universe with, you know, they're going to have a G.I. Joe crossover at some point, but they've got a Bumblebee movie coming out, and then they're going to have another couple Transformer movies, and they're going to have a prequel, and they want to do what Disney's done with Star Wars, where there's a Transformer movie or spinoff coming out every year. So they got like 12 movies planned, and this is the first one. Yeah, this is the way of the world. Yeah. That's the plan.
And I wouldn't say that Deadpool was worth $1 billion either. But
well, I like Deadpool. I like Deadpool a lot.
I liked it, but I mean, I don't know. It just seems that, you know. But then again, I liked King Kong too. So just like you said, King Kong was good.
King Kong was very good. King Kong did exactly what it was supposed to do.
I really liked it. So and did I don't even know why. Explain it to me now. I'm at a loss. Why did I like King Kong? It was good.
Because you know what? It does what a King Kong.
It started out really good too. It opened good. You know, the first five.
Well, it opened good, and they show you Kong. They don't make you wait the whole movie to see Kong. That's one. Two. It's like the fun of King Kong is that you know Kong's out there. You see Kong. You like Kong. But you wait till people encounter him, and then that's the fun of Kong. They keep making these movies where like, oh, wait, do we all see Kong? Wait, do we all see Kong? It's like, no, we've seen Kong. We know what Kong can do. Let's let these idiots get in there, find Kong, and then be stupid enough to fight him. And you're rooting for Kong. Kick his ass, Kong. That's you watch all those Japanese movies. What it is, it's like you're rooting for Mothra or Godzilla, or you know,
I was always rooting for the little people that sang.
Well, yeah, of course, Mothra. Yeah, of course. So that's my opinion of why.
Do you know what I watched recently? I watched Superman, the original Superman with George Reeves and the Mole Men. Have you ever seen that? Superman and the Mole Men?
I'm sure I saw it as a child.
You haven't seen it recently? You
should no, when would I put that, when would I watch
oh,
that?
Oh, the little mole men, they dug 3 miles into the ground and the mole men come out. I mean, come on, how much better than that can you get? And Superman saves the world.
Well, there
send them back. Send them back. You must go back.
The mole people.
Yeah, they take one of them, they shoot, you know, they have the townspeople with the guns. I'll take care of it, Superman. They shoot the mole man, he falls from the bridge, and then his buddies come back out with a ray gun. And it's just great. You have to see it. It's a classic, 1950.
You know, this is the one that was released in the theater, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is what started the whole Superman, you know, 1950s, you know, George Reeves series. And when they showed it on TV, they used to show it two parts because...
Right, I remember that.
Yeah. But it was fun. It was fun to watch it because it just reminds me of, you know, growing up. That's a new thing. What reminds us of growing up, which is why antiques and people are buying them, because they want to relive their childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know I'm,
by the way, I got my little my film review magazine with the Planet of the Apes cover. It's just classic.
Oh,
it's
you got the, it? You went to get it? Oh, you ordered it? Yes, so right. Dude, you have it? Yes, yeah, I see. I told you.
I can't thank you enough for just turning me on to that because it's just cool. It's worth framing that.
Exactly,
dude.
Exactly. You want to put it up on the wall, right?
See that could happen.
What's that?
You see that and you get excited. You're like, oh my God, this is just great. By the, you know, Escape by the Eight.
All right. I have a couple questions about just some current events here and just to get your take on it. So what's your thought on the fact that they're doing press briefings with no audio, no camera? What's your take on that? And they only, of course, allow president-friendly media.
Well, it's moving towards that.
It's moving towards propaganda.
It's been moving towards that since the conference originally started. I mean, I have witnessed and seen things that I would never, ever, ever have thought happened in the press to date. So this is just another manifestation of that. And at this point, I'm hoping that we survive the outcome.
So, but what's your take? Why do you think they're doing it? Why do you think that they would say no audio, no video? If you come, you just can't record it.
I don't know. Isn't it quite obvious?
Well, I just want to know.
I mean, my take on it is I believe in this radio station. I believe in free press. I believe in as much exposure to the truth as we possibly can have. So if you, it's against our constitution of free press, the ability for us to be able to express ourselves, our First Amendment rights. And with that comes where, you know, there's a responsibility that I feel comes with the presidency and being in political, you know, being in a political arena where, you know, you have a responsibility to be subject to being questioned as well as recorded, as well as shown to the world in living color. And
in other words, you should be accountable if you're a public figure. Public.
I think that every conversation in the White House should be recorded. If you meet, you're in the presence of the president, everything you say, including the president, should be recorded in some capacity for prosperity or for whatever that would be. You should be accountable for what you say and what you do in any office. About that, I'm saying it. You know, I think it's I'm outraged.
Well, not only that, but he won't let you record anything, and he'll only talk for like 15 minutes a day. Do you know that? Less than 15 minutes. It's like he'll take a couple questions, and then most of the time he'll say stuff like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, you, it, I mean,
like they wouldn't even respond to questions about the audio policy.
Right. So what do you? What do you? What do you?
No, I wanted you to your take. You're the political guy. I want to know your take.
I'm the guy that knows that in the end we need to keep this station alive, you know. And however, whatever that by any means possible, this station needs to exist and continue and be supported. And by everybody listening, if you're listening and you want to send $5 to BAI or $10 because of what we're saying, do it. You know, because it's very, very important because of this. Because at some point, you know, this station could be silenced, as well as what we're talking about no more audio. People coming out of White House. And as you always say, this is how it starts, right? That's it. How it starts.
Mm.
So I mean, I don't know. It's scary. I just think it's unheard of. I mean, but how do you stop the flow of information? If people can't hear it and people can't see it, did it happen at all? Right.
Well, there it is. I mean. You know, that's how much of history has been changed.
I mean, if they wouldn't have filmed Rodney King that night, would anybody have believed it ever happened?
Well, we're rapidly increasing. If you saw the verdict in that killing, we're rapidly getting to a point where it doesn't matter what's on the video. People's bias is stronger than any truth of a situation. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that somebody's blatantly racist. There's a man who... Today I read a policeman gunned down a pregnant black woman. Okay? A small, short woman. She had a knife. He killed her. What the hell?
So, you know, a clear example would have been if there wouldn't have been a videotape of them dragging the gentleman off the plane.
I agree.
If there wouldn't have been video of that, what the report would have been on the news? Of course, disgruntled.
Of course, what their media, their PR person would have put out would have been what would have been out there.
Right.
See, that's the deal. You see, if you have video or audio, you can't spin it. You can't spin it.
Yeah, but even with the audio now, sometimes
you can't spin it though. Well, yeah, sure, they'll dispute. Anything, yeah, I agree. It's just
listen, everything you can spin anything, dude. It's if you want to. It's like I really didn't say that. Yeah, but we have you saying that. Yeah, but I didn't say what you think I said. That's the line, Mike. I didn't say what you think I said. Yeah, but I heard you say that. Yeah, but that's not what I said. I said what you think I said, but that's not what I said. Like, what? You know, someday they're going to make a movie about all this, you know.
Hello?
Say hello to Chris.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Elena. Where you been?
You know, up and down and inside out. So, did you miss me?
Yeah.
So what you been up to? Just catch me up real quick.
Oh, upside down. Upside down.
That's a good position, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. So,
I've been out looking for, you know, Journey LPs. Trying to find some Journey.
Have you had any success?
Although people seem to be really into vinyl this year. That's the new thing. Albums. Everybody wants vinyl.
Well, I know someone. It's interesting you mention that, because I know someone that has like a Bruce Springsteen original before, like, you know, he got famous. They're looking to sell it, so maybe you could help me out.
Oh. Everything old is new again.
Except for us.
So I do have this story for you, Elena.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a story, you know, we have Life is Like Science Fiction, but we don't always have Life is Like Science Fiction specifically for women. So this is interesting. This is, and I'd like your opinion on it, of course, as a woman.
Well, thank you for pointing that out.
Yes.
Your nipples can help you find your perfect lip color, apparently.
See that? The phone number here, by the way, is 347. Well, I sent it to you, but I didn't give it out on the air. 347-335-0818. Elena's here. Chris is here. We're on the air. It's night shift. And I do have a night shift question I'll be asking you in a few minutes.
All right. So let's go on. Okay. You probably think you've heard all the lipstick tips by now. Look at your veins to figure out if you're a warm or a cool tone.
Now hold on a second. Is that a thing? Do women do that? Have you ever heard that before? Like, look at your veins to see if you're a warm tone or a cool tone to figure out which lipstick color to wear?
No.
Okay.
I wear whatever is.
I know you, but I mean, have you? I don't speak for every woman, but you just wear whatever looks good. Actually, read the story.
Okay. Swatch the color on your wrist. I do that. Okay. Use the at-home try-on app, but there's a new trick that might just be the most foolproof.
At-home try-on app? What does that mean? Like on your phone app?
No, application.
Oh.
You don't have to be totally goofball. Okay, but there's a new trick, again, that might be foolproof. According to the TV show The Doctors, you're perfectly... lipstick shade is the color of your nipples. Yes, you read that right. I've read that right. Online makeup buying just got a lot easier, my friends.
So the perfect lip. Now, what if you have, like, dark nipples? Then do you have to go goth? I don't know if I buy this theory. Chris, what's your thought on this?
I think we, why stop at the nipples?
Like, what color should you be going for from what body part?
He's looking at the vagina.
Really? You should go, that's vagina, scrotum. The color of your vagina. No, we were talking about women. No, women.
That's the color of your scrotum. Oh,
Women, dummy.
Women.
Women should match the color of the scrotum, so men feel more
that's
at home.
That's a disturbing concept.
Well, what if you were on a first date? You don't know what the color of the scrotum is. This is going so far off track. I understand what you're
going
for.
A woman ever says to you, you go, oh, Riley, what color is that lipstick? She goes, scrotum. I think you'd, like, you'd check, you know.
Micah sent this to me before, and, you know, again, when I look at my, not to get too personal, but when I look at my nipples, I don't look at the color. I mean, they're like...
You look at the texture.
I don't even do that. I don't like it. I mean, just like a... you know, and I made the joke and I sent back to Michael and then I actually meant it. I'm like, I'm just looking for where, whatever hairs are growing out of my nipples. I otherwise, I don't really look at the color.
So in other words, and you're unconscious to the color. Like if I went to the store and I said, Elena, what's the color hair that matches your nipple? You'd be like, hold on a second and have to look in your shirt. Is that what you're
I would have
me?
To look at my shirt.
Like you don't know your nipple color by heart.
No, I don't look at it. Do you look at your nipples? I mean...
No, but Chris once showed me his nipple. He had a nipple ring and he exposed it to me on the air.
That, well, ow. I mean, I can look at it right now, but... I mean, I don't
know. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yeah, you got excited. As a matter of fact, everything I have is pierced now.
See, I really don't have a nipple color. So what does that mean? I don't wear lipstick.
It means you put on Vaseline. Just some lip gloss.
So. But I do that. I do aloe vera. I mean, whatever.
It's a weird article.
It is a weird article. It's just, it's a weird, just, it's just weird. Okay. It's weird. I still ask the question about the dark nipple. I still, that's, to me, that's, I don't know. I don't buy this theory.
Elena it doesn't Clark. Work. No, it doesn't work that way. I mean,
well, this
know,
is what they say. They're putting this out there.
They can put it's anything a, out there.
It's I mean, in a book. It's in a book. It was on the internet, so you know it's true. Okay. Are you ready?
Listen, they say that babies can differentiate between numbers, even though they aren't cognizant of them. Like a 1-month-year-old baby, they put the headset on and they showed it pictures. It can differentiate between eight little ducks and 16 ducks.
Well, of course. Why would they not be able to? You can register even if you don't have a name or a way to identify it.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense of it.
Well, it's just, but I mean, could you imagine putting those little like those little things on a baby's head? No. Those little
what?
Caps, with all the caps with all the electronics on it, so they could monitor where in the brain the baby registered.
What?
Hmm?
Huh?
What? In other words, somebody did these tests.
He takes another hit.
Are you still hookah. Wearing the cap? Is that what the problem
yeah,
is?
The hat.
I have a little,
Chris is still wearing the cap. They for, his parents forgot to take it off. So he's going to just have it pierced.
Yeah, I'm still wearing the cap, my little baby cap, when I was 2 months old. Don't you have one, Mike?
No. Hey. So,
you know, Mike, if you went to the Pentagon, if you would have been wearing your baby cap, they wouldn't have messed with you.
It couldn't fit on his head.
Let me ask you something, Mike. How did you dress when you went to the Pentagon? Did you dress in your whole, like, thing?
My whole thing, yes. I was wearing a jumpsuit.
Yeah, did you dress in the thing with the dress and all that stuff?
I had a jetpack and
a
proton blaster. I was dressed like one of the Ghostbusters.
Oh, did you dress like you just, you know, did you just...
I dressed like an adult. I went, I had shoes, I had slacks, I had a collared shirt, I had a jacket. I dressed ethnic, yes I did. I had overalls and a straw hat, and I was carrying a watermelon.
Dressed ethnic.
And his clothes matched his
nipples.
You know
what's really funny, Mike? They didn't notice you till you were leaving. Then it's like, hey, where'd that guy come from? Get him. that's funny, man. That's funny. Did you hear, Elena, that Mike...
Actually, I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you said that you alluded that you had everything pierced, do you have your pee-pee pierced?
Oh yeah, yes. When I go to the bathroom, it's like a rain, you know, like what do you call those rain things that have holes in it?
He does tricks. Yeah, he does tricks.
No, no. When you're out, what do you call it? Like you're watering the lawn, sprinkler.
So the pee pee ring gets in the way of your pee peeing.
Yeah, it's pierced enough; it becomes a sprinkler.
I'm fascinated.
Clearly. All right, I have a story for you. Meet Cyborg, the man with a camera eye. Cyborg revolution is coming, one glowing eyeball at a time. Rob Spence, a documentary filmmaker. Now, this is from Live Science, okay? This is written by Tia Ghosh. It says here, Rob Spence, a documentary filmmaker from Canada, has a prosthetic eye that doubles as a video camera. Spence, who is in his 40s, accidentally shot himself in the eye as a child, and though he retained his damaged eye for years, his cornea eventually degenerated to the point where it needed to be removed in 2007. At that point, he wondered whether he could replace his eye with something that had a little more flair than the typical prosthetic eye. He began speaking with independent radio frequency engineer and designer Costa Grammatis, who helped him design a camera eye. The wireless camera sits behind a prosthetic eye. The equipment to create the camera eye includes components such as a microtransmitter, a small battery, a miniature camera, and a magnetic switch that allows Spence to turn the camera on and off. Later, electrical engineer Martin Ling helped design a tiny circuit board that can take all the data from the camera and send it out to the wide world via a receiver, according to the Cyborg Project, a website about Spence's project. The first version of the eye was built in 2008, though he recently described his eye in June 10th at a talk at the Future World Conference in Canada. So far, the camera has no connection to his brain or his optic nerve, so it's perhaps not fair to call Spence a true cyborg. The camera can record about 30 minutes of footage before needing to be recharged, which means it's never on all the time. Camera is also fitted with a glowing red LED light, so he can look like the Terminator. No, it doesn't say that. So anyone who is being recorded knows when they're being recorded. Now, that's got to be a little weird. It's like, excuse me, all of a sudden, and he's got like a red beam laser eye looking at you. I think I'd be a little nervous. Anyway, it says the camera can record.
I can't imagine the first date with him.
You know, he's like, I just want to record this for memory.
Let me look at your nipples. I'll tell you what I call
exactly. He can lipstick to wear. He can burn the hair off for you. Anyway, it says the camera is also fitted with glowing red LED lights, so anyone knows they're being recorded. Spence believes that these limitations make privacy concerns different from those raised with other technologies, such as Google Glass, which could record all the time without others knowing. On the other hand, he is not apologetic about his ability to record other people. He says, there's competing tension between my right to replace my eye that I lost versus others' rights to privacy. Am I not allowed to put an eye camera in my own body? Spence isn't the first cyborg to work among us. Artist Neil Harbison was born colorblind but can see colors thanks to a cybernetic eye that turns colors into musical notes.
So life that's cool.
Wow.
Is like science fiction.
Wow.
Were you with that, Chris?
Yeah, you know, when you started the show, you had some clips from Star Trek V.
Yes, I did.
That's who he is. You did not know that about him?
These are your friends. Didn't you know?
Yeah, how many clips you got? Just that's it. That's
all. Oh, I had a couple clips.
I want more clips. Star Trek V. I want more. Didn't you know?
Didn't you know? Elena has a story for us.
This is quite interesting, and we've all experienced the haunted road motorists are too afraid to drive down. Now, I can actually relate to this. Haunted places in the middle of the night where you drive and you are frightened, you know, out of your tits. And your tits change color, so therefore your lipstick does not work. Here we go. There is a ghostly road that many drivers would prefer not to travel. On it, windscreen wipers suddenly stop working. Cars lock and unlock themselves, radios switch off, or a ramp unexpectedly, and ghoulish apparitions reportedly appear under cover of darkness. The stretch is Wakefirst Parkway in Sydney, but a little of the beaten path. Crashes are not infrequent and has a murderous past. There have been countless unexplained supernatural occurrences on Wakefirst Parkway. Drivers say a pedestrian crossing at Oxford Falls is where the green man flashes repeatedly at 3 a.m. Spooky, still are two ghoulish women who arrive along the highway at night. The Australian Daily Telegraph writes, one is older, one is younger, and both terrify motorists as they appear in the rear view mirror. According to local legend, the elder of the two is a Scottish nun who died in the road 50 years ago. The other is a young lady named Kelly, who was killed in tragic circumstances in the 1970s. She's said to be slain hitchhiker who was trapped in the back seat. Psychic medium Mary Loughran says that if you don't tell Kelly to leave your vehicle, she'll run you off the road.
So you have to yell if the ghost of Kelly gets in your car.
You gotta tell her yell. To get the you heck out.
Get out, Kelly! Get out!
Mary says she's seen Kelly numerous times. Then why do you keep going down that road? I mean,
like, isn't there another road? Is there like a back road?
The first time I took the road ghost was about highway. 6 years ago. Kelly explains it was about 2 a.m. and I had the feeling of someone touching the back of my neck. It felt like a cool hand would be on a cold day. She's like a white
cool hand.
Faded apparition of a girl in the back seat. My daughter Ellie, and she takes her daughter. I mean, good grief.
And she lets her daughter sit in the back seat too. She's like, sit back there next to the ghost, honey.
It's her new best friend. My daughter Ellie used to
ask her if she wants some pie.
Ask her not to touch my neck. My daughter Ellie used to drive down the road on her way back from work. She had seen Kelly as well as the other older woman in her car, who could be the nun. Mary says she thinks most hauntings happened in places where tragic deaths have taken place. She doesn't think Kelly is an evil presence, but is traumatized one. She just wants a ride home.
So Chris, let me ask you, what's your thought on the whole idea that, you know, and this is taken to the assumption that you believe there is such a thing, of course, as the soul. And the concept that the soul or consciousness, if it is, you know, if life is ended in a certain way, it does not move on to its next stage and becomes something that stays on this plane. What's your thought on that? Do you think it's possible? Do you believe in ghosts?
Um, I've been with a lot of people that believe in ghosts. I believe that there's something to all of it. I also believe that I believe that we're these spiritual beings. I believe we're aliens, and we're these spiritual beings, and we just occupy these bodies so that we can feel what it means to be
human,
alive. What it feels to feel what alive would be, to feel, touch, love, experience all these things that we experience in these bodies. And then when we no longer, when our bodies, these machines or these bodies that we have break down, then we go back to this this spirit state, which floats back to whatever.
Okay. All right. I get all that. That's good context. So the question is the question. Yeah. All right. So
can you get caught
right
between that world? Is what you're asking. Me.
Yes,
and yes. That might, you know, it could be.
Well,
possible.
It's two questions, I guess. Then, do you believe you can get caught between worlds? And then, two, do you think the circumstances of your death could contribute to you becoming an apparition? I'm going to ask you next, Elena, because you're from the South.
An apparition.
Yeah.
Could the subject of your death because of an apparition
cause you to become one?
You could have enough intense energy that you don't want to. You don't want to leave for whatever reason.
And so you
don't. And I don't know what the circumstances would dictate that would be, but I think it is possible that you could get caught, or you could have enough energy that compels you to want to stay here for whatever reasons. You're so...
All right, so you're saying not have to do with the death, just have to do with your desire to stay here.
Because you don't have an answer? Let's say you had a... You know, because everybody has different forms of energy. You know that, right? Sometimes you meet someone that's like, wow, this guy's got like a lot of energy. And so I would think that spiritually you could have a different levels of energy that would be part of your spirit. So, because, you know, what makes some people incredibly able to accomplish some things that are just mind boggling? What is it in someone that takes them, propels them past the level of someone else? So isn't that all what all is? So I don't know. Yeah. So I think that if you have a really intense desire to stay here, you might be able to spiritually.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Elena,
that's
pretty good. Chris, give Goodwin. What's your answer there? Do you believe in ghosts?
Who are you asking? Me or Elena?
I'm asking Elena. You already gave me your explanation.
No, you had a great explanation. And then I'll actually catapult from that to but the opposite direction in terms of the opposite direction. I think that we, you know, as beings, like, we search for answers. And in terms of, you know, if we are in the physical state right now that we're in our bodies, that we look for these things on the other side. I think that people, like, you know, culminate these visions. I don't think they really exist. I think that they're looking for answers themselves in their own physical state.
What visions are you talking about?
These visions of, like, dead people just happening to be in their back, you know, the back seat of their car.
All right, so you don't believe in ghosts. Is that what you're ultimately saying?
I think that people, I don't disagree with, I mean,
you think that people think they see them?
Yes, I think people that, like, want to see them. I think people are looking for answers. They want to see certain things. And they, you know, again, they culminate this vision.
But you don't believe there are ghosts. You've never encountered a ghost.
I don't think they're
ghost.
Really.
You've never encountered a ghost.
I think it's
in
your imagination.
You think ghosts are in the imagination. All right. Okay. Interesting. Elena?
Do you want me to continue with the story?
Yeah, no, if there's more to the story. But I'm going to give out the phone number. You can tell us if you believe in ghosts, 347-335-0818. And if you do or you don't, you can tell us why. It's a night shift question. But go ahead, Elena. 347-335-0818.
Mary has said she thinks most haunting happens in places where tragic deaths have taken place. Again, that goes along with my theory, that people are like looking. They think they're going to see that. They want an answer. And people want to be frightened, and they want to, and, you know, why do we go to, you know, fright films, or why do we do, you know, virtual reality, you know, games? Why do we do all this? We're looking for something that's beyond our what can be considered a stagnant life or a stagnant cognition of yourself. I'm like, where, you know, say, even me, you know, I'm like, I need stimulation.
Do you need stimulation, Elena?
Yes. Emotional stimulation.
Is that why you like to go into the haunted house with Joe?
Yeah, actually, that's a very perfect example.
I understand.
I mean, you know, again, it was just too frightening for words. And it brought out, like, the adrenaline, brought out...
So, all right, so you think because human beings need stimulus and like to be stimulated and like to be scared or go on roller coaster or have virtual reality, you know, suspend their disbelief and get excited or whatever, 4D movies. So because human beings like that, you think that ghosts are just a construct of that. They're just part of that, you know, desire for experience and desire for
It's the ultimate, answers. Yeah, it's the ultimate cognition theory.
So ghosts are the ultimate cognition theory? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean,
ghosts are the ultimate cognition theory. Elena Fulgham. All right, you can go on with the story. I'm ready.
All right, cool. It's not just Mary who believes in this harrowing parkway. Samantha Fisher, 22, from Bigelow, says her mother Cheryl blacked out without reason while driving there on 1998. Samantha tells the paper she blacked out coming onto a turn. She remembers feeling the accident happening, however, couldn't move or see, but could hear and feel it.
Was it a stroke?
Yes, of course. It's probably a stroke or she was drunk.
Ah, you're like Kolchak.
I was 3 years old and I slept through the whole thing. The car went up on one side of the road and the rock faces, and one of the top of the car tipped off the side and smashed down on the road. Mom had a broken back but recovered fully after 3 months of no movement, and I had no injuries. There's even been a movie made about Parkway. Filmmaker Bianca Biasi made the Parkway hauntings in 2015. She said filming in Deep Creek Reserve, a place believed to have been a murderous spot popular with dumping dead bodies in the past, was terrifying. It was freaky, said Bianca.
And see my movie. It's on Amazon right now.
We had a psychic medium with us, and she described the detail that someone had been murdered there. All of a sudden, the actors started behaving strangely. A couple started throwing up, and we considered hospitalizing one because it was so hard to calm her down. Something instinctively told me to get them out of there. It was eerie. I've been a lot of haunted places, and there's something very eerie about that place. There's definitely darkness there.
Well, there it is. Have you ever driven down a scary road, Chris?
Yeah.
What do you do? Like, do you ever, like, what is, like, what's your, like, what scares you about, what makes a road scary besides it being dark? Are you just scared you'll crash, or you're scared something will jump out?
Uh,
I can't explain. Just getting lost, and then the road gets narrower as you're driving.
Yeah.
And then you're driving, and then at a certain point, the road can feel like it's becoming less of a road. And you're going to get stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
If you want, you know, you made a wrong turn, then you could be, you know, you could be stuck out.
Gotcha.
And nobody will find you.
Stay away from the moors.
And you're out in the elements, and then you just die. And then that's happens all the time.
Clearly a well thought out fear there you have, Chris.
Well, I mean, it can happen easily, dude. You could be driving in bad weather, and you can drive off the road. You get lost. You know, GPS, you know, your GPS is working on your phone. You make a wrong turn, or it's a wrong turn off the GPS. Snowing, and you get stuck somewhere.
So, like Elena in the snow.
And then you're stuck, and then you just freeze to death. You run out of gas, and you freeze to death. They find you like you look like Jack Nicholson from The Shining. You know, they find you a couple days later.
That's a good image.
Then you're a ghost in that area.
And you sit in the back of people's car and keep changing their radio.
I don't like this station.
You know?
Exactly. It just keeps going to somebody murdered me. I'm going to change the station.
Just go to a station like where you pick up the dead. You know, you see
it's like. You know, what also is scary sometimes is you could be driving and it could be really bad weather comes and the weather changes and a torrential rain and all of a sudden you're driving down an area where you all of a sudden. It's a flash flood thing, and your car and all, and you're in the embankment, and you're drowning, just like that. These things happen, man, just like that. You know. So there it is. That's a fear. That's why.
Well, driving. Period.
I'm scared.
No matter the weather. And actually, everybody else is fearful than when I'm driving.
It's 120 degrees right now in L.A. and in Arizona. It's having a heat wave, you know?
That's relevant.
You drive the road and you break down. It's not hot.
I think what's frightening is the loneliness. And there's too many thoughts that go through your head, which is might be one more explanation of why people are seeing things that, you know, or feeling things. When you have too much time alone and have time to, like, drone out.
Think about things. Think about how many beats your heart is doing. That kind of stuff, Elena?
I guess, but...
I think about how easy it is to become dehydrated.
Well, okay, I don't go that deep, but...
You know what I'm saying, Mike? If you're out and it's a really hot day and you become dehydrated...
Is Mike
still there?
I'm there, but what's your question? I don't understand your question.
No, my question is, that's a fear right there, you know?
Of becoming dehydrated?
Yeah, becoming dehydrated. It's very easy to become dehydrated very quickly. And then you start hallucinating and then you just, you know, you become dehydrated and pass out.
Yeah, I'm sure, but it's not something I really ever felt like, oh, you know, I'm here someplace hot.
That's because you haven't really gone anywhere. If you're in the city, you should get out.
I've gone places, but I always bring water with me. I bring water with me. I don't go with, like, the desert adventure with no water so I can worry about
dehydrating.
I bring water.
They knock you down, and they jump on you, and they take you inside, and they took your ID.
Listen, if that happens, my biggest worry is not dehydration.
You know? No, I'm saying is that this is what happens to you. If you're the kind of guy that if you went on some kind of a trip, you would get dehydrated because I'm just like you.
What does that mean? I'm some kind of guy who's going to go on a trip and get dehydrated.
You're the kind of guy that if you went on some kind
of
a camping trip.
First of all, that is not happening. I bring water.
Except not here.
No, I'm serious, dude. No matter what you do, you
we're dehydrated right now. So, but we're still going on.
That's right. We're going to have to go get some water in a minute. We've got a whole hour left. It's 2:02 in the morning, and you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. And the name of the show?
Night Shift.
We're here every Monday from midnight till 3 a.m.
All for you, and we will be haunting you. We'll be touching your necks in their back seats.
The name of the show.
Or your lounge chair.
The feeling you're going to have.
Oh, awesome. Stimulated.
All right, I have another story for you.
Yippee!
Okay, this is, to me, really life is like science fiction. New heart attack treatment uses photosynthetic bacteria to make oxygen. Cyanobacteria lessened damage to rats' hearts deprived of blood supply. Acting like miniature trees that soak up sunlight and release oxygen, photosynthetic bacteria injected into the heart may lighten the damage from heart attacks, a new study in rats suggests. When researchers injected the bacteria into the rats' hearts, the microbes restored oxygen to heart tissue after blood supply was cut off, as in a heart attack. I have to say, these poor rats. University report June 14th in Science Advances. It's really out of the box, said Himdri Pakrazi, assistant biologist at Washington University in St. Louis, who is not involved in research. It reads like science fiction to me, but it's fantastic if it works. The organism called Synococcus elongatus has been used recently to produce biofuels, but this may be the first time that this cyanobacteria has ever been used in a medical setting, he says. Other researchers have reacted enthusiastically to this study. It's outrageous, but outrageous in a good way, says Susan Golden, who studies cyanobacteria at the University of California, San Diego. Cardiovascular scientist Matthias Narendorf of Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston says, I enjoy the idea. It's really fresh. It's really fresh. It's bringing oxygen. Bringing oxygen to starved tissues is what Stanford cardiovascular surgeon Joseph Wu had in mind when he and colleagues dreamed up the plan to put light harvesting bacteria into the heart. In a heart attack, clogged arteries or blood clots cut off blood flow to the organ. Without oxygen supplied by the blood, heart cells die. Wu wanted a way for the heart to make its own oxygen or access another supply until doctors could open blocked vessels and restore the blood flow. Plants make oxygen from carbon dioxide and sunlight, so Wu wondered, why not bring the tree to your heart? And they go on to tell how he did it, but that's still pretty fantastic to me. What do you think, Chris?
I like it. Anything that they can do to save us.
Anything they can do to save us. Yes.
You know, if we could just last another 10 or 15 years. You know,
10 or 15 years more.
By the time we catch up to the...
Well, Elena, obviously you're not against injecting bacteria into you.
No, that's why I eat McDonald's.
That's what I figured.
I mean, it's kept me alive.
Well... That depends on how you look at life, Elena. You're preserved, though.
I know. I'm, like, embalmed. Embalmed in fat.
Yeah, but it doesn't show. You have no fat on you, like zero fat.
I know. It just soaks away.
I don't know how you do it, Elena. You are a marvel of nature.
I know, but at least it's good for my tit color.
Nipple.
Oh, well, whatever. we're back. Lovely. And we're not in the back of your car. We're in the back of your mind, so let's keep going. More than 30 idiots have attempted to trademark Covfefe.
Oh, Covfefe.
Covfefe.
How do you pronounce it, Chris? How do you pronounce that, his word?
Oh, Covfefe.
Covfefe, okay. Go ahead.
What it is it's, Covfefe, what it means
everybody
is...
Everybody knows what it is. What does it mean?
What, huh?
Everybody knows what it is. But go ahead, Chris, what does it mean?
I'm really saying confetti.
What are you going to say?
What you saying?
No, what were you saying?
No, I was saying that he was saying that it was confetti, but he spelled it Covfefe.
And Helena.
So.
What do you think he was saying? You think he was saying something else?
I don't know.
What do you think he meant? He said everybody knows what he meant.
No, I was kidding.
He said he was saying that whatever, he was making a comment that it's all just a bunch of confetti, is what he was saying, but it came out as Covfefe because he wrote it. Well, I just, you know, sometimes, you know how you spell something, you see it look right, and you hit send? All the time.
That's why you shouldn't tweet.
Like you sent me that picture of Christopher Walken when he was like 18 with no shirt on, and now the Pentagon wants to know why you were sending that.
All right.
Ignore me, Mike.
I'm
okay.
Not ignoring you.
You sent me that picture of Walken, right? Did you not? Now the Pentagon wants to know why you're sending those kind of pictures.
I don't know that they want to know.
You have to delete all our conversations because they got our conversations going all the way back now. So, like, that's a point.
I don't know if I'm on the list or not. So go ahead, Elena. So did you know this? All these people were trying to do this, Chris?
Yes, of course people were. No, I knew this. Listen, was there a really bad thunderstorm tonight in New York?
Yes, I was out in it on my way to Transformers.
Were you? What happened?
It was a monsoon. A monsoon. And then it was over.
It was biblical, is what everybody's saying.
It was pretty intense. It was pretty intense.
It was ghostbustery. It was like the ghostbustery.
It was definitely ghostbustery. Yes, it was. So, Elena, go ahead. Tell me about Covfefe.
After President Trump tweeted the word Covfefe. Accidentally.
You can pronounce it however you want, Elena.
Covfefe. Accidentally a few weeks ago. We know it feels like years. Some people simply refuse to let it die. So much so, which actually goes along with my theory about people don't like to let things die. So much so, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has received more than 30 trademark requests that include the word confetti. According to The Hill, outside of a request to trademark the word as is, other requests include hashing versions of the word and even Covfefe coffee. One man wants to use
Covfefe coffee.
Wants to use Covfefe to sell clothing for domestic pets, in addition to costumes, footwear, hats, and maternity Muppets to humans with what a
maternity
world.
Wait, what was the last one there?
Maternity outfits.
Oh, sorry. Maternity outfits. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, if I were to get pregnant, then I could, you know, wear a Covfefe. One man wants to use Covfefe to sell clothing for domestic pets and blah blah blah. To all this madness.
Wow.
One say, stop trying to continue Covfefe and let it die, friends. In other words, meet Insanity News. Representative Mike Quinley created the Covfefe Act, a version, they actually created an act for this, a version of the word that has become an acronym for communications over various feeds electronically for engagement. The bill would require that president's social media feeds to include unofficial records.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this. Yeah, I heard about this. The Confeffi Act. Yes. Chris, had you heard about that, the Confeffi Act?
Yeah, I'm all about the Confeffi.
You're all about the Confeffi. Is that an alien race in the new Star Trek movie?
It's one of the Confeffi.
The Confeffi are coming.
The Confeffi are not part of the Federation.
I'm unlikely.
Answer it, Juno. What's the line? Answer him. Do not wait for the translation. Oh, exactly. Answer now.
Don't wait for the translation. Answer the question right now.
He's great. Christopher Plummer is fantastic. I love it. So, Elena, you can finish. Is there more?
Okay. In order to maintain public trust in government, elected officials must answer for what they do and say. That includes 140-character tweets, Quigley said, a statement about the act. Okay, that's interesting. So, President Trump's frequent, unfiltered use of his personal Twitter account as a means of official communications is unprecedented. If the president is going to take...
Pardon the pun.
Yes. Is going to take for social media to make sudden public policy proclamations, we must ensure that these statements are documented and preserved for future reference. Tweets are powerful, and the president must be accountable for every
tweets
post.
Are powerful. Tweets are powerful.
So is the Confeffi Act.
Tweets are powerful and must be recorded.
That's like another line from Zardoz. I have an interesting story. What's happening, Elena? What were you saying to me, Elena?
Oh, no, nothing. I just wanted a simple water.
Oh, you tried to sip my water. All right, well, we're going to step out and take a water break in a minute, but I did have a story I was going to read to Chris. Chris, are you still there?
No, I left and I came back.
Okay.
Can I read the underwear story after you do this? Because I thought,
what's the underwear story?
The one about how men are so obsessed with their underwear. But I know that's not serious enough for you. Here you go.
Exactly. We have to have more serious, like...
Plus, you don't answer any of the questions. Yeah, you know, I have to talk about the color of my nipples.
I'll just read the title of this story. Yes, you do have to talk about the color of nipples.
Hey, Mike, what's the phone number?
347-335-0818.
What is it? 347?
347-335-0818. Look at Elena trying to mess people up. 347-335-0818.
Well, they can't look at me. We're on the radio, goofball.
Hey, Mike, is anybody calling?
I don't know who they are or what they are, but they're going to get me, and I'm scared, Jay. I'm so scared. I can't do anything. I can't go to my sister's. I can't even. I can't even go home. I don't know what to do.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah. I was trying to make sure that Elena didn't give out the wrong number again.
Okay. I don't have my glasses on. Oh,
that
I'm
poor
sorry.
Lady at 0815.
Exactly. Who's getting the calls that Elena keeps giving out the number?
It's like that song. Oh, P09. Everybody called that. And
347-335-0818. All right, so is this Danny?
Yes, I just wanted to say hi, and I'm about to fly out. Going back to the mainland. How you doing? How you doing, Elena?
I know, you miss me.
Of course I do.
So,
Danny, you're coming back?
Yeah.
You're coming back?
Yeah, I'm going to come back and kick somebody's ass.
Yeah, I know you will. Are you on the mainland now? I mean, are you in the U.S. now?
I'm on the plane right now.
Get out of here. You're calling in air.
I'm calling on the ground, about to take off.
Oh, from Hawaii to U.S. or from U.S. back to Hawaii?
From Hawaii to the U.S.
Oh, wow.
To the U.S. because Danny's got to graduate. He's coming into town.
Oh, wow.
So...
So Danny, you can tell me the color of my nipples and what lipstick I should wear.
Well, Danny, no,
I mean that should be your number one priority.
That's why he's flying in. He's flying in.
He's like, oh, screw who I am. I just know what Elena's lipstick should be, and I want to know what her true nipple color is.
She's going to tell you about the underwear, but I do have a question for you, Danny. Since you called in, do you believe in ghosts? And if so, why?
I believe in making ghosts.
What's that?
I'm about to kick somebody's ass. I believe in making ghosts. Because I'm going to kick somebody's ass.
No,
seriously, do I believe in ghosts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe.
Now,
I haven't seen it, but I believe it.
You haven't seen it, but you believe it. Now, do you believe that the way you die may contribute to you becoming a ghost? Like you know, they talk about, you know, tortured souls or people who died horribly, or as Chris says, he doesn't believe that it has anything to do with how you die. He believes that if you just have that strong desire from the soul to stay for whatever reason, you could possibly stay. So which do you think it is? Or do you think it's both?
Yeah, I put it this way. Whenever I have a 24-hour duty in a building that used to be a morgue back in the 40s. And we know what happened back in the 40s here in Hawaii. So
yes,
on December 7th, put all the bodies into the morgue. And it's like now when we stand duty, we have this like eerie feeling, and then we have all these unexplained events that occurs inside this building. I don't even go inside that building after dark. That's it.
Whoa.
Once the sun sets, I'm not going in that building.
Whoa. So this is a building in Hawaii. A military facility that at one point was used for getting rid of all these dead bodies.
One pint. It takes a pint to see what you need to see.
Shut up, Elena. So,
oh my God, there's a ghost. I had a pint.
You know something? So that's kind of weird. So when you say you won't even go there at night now, that leads to another question. Do you, if you believe in ghosts, why do ghosts need the darkness?
I, is a very good question. I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't. It's like during the day, you know, maybe it's because the living habits that building during the day, but at night, they have the freedom to roam free around.
Because the living inhabit during the day. Okay, that's good. Too much of the living. The dead can't be around too much of the living. Because at night... Interesting. That's good.
But don't you think that also, too, like, mentally you can, like, again, culminate or fabricate?
Yeah, now, Elena's got a third theory. She believes it's all in our minds.
I think we want...
No, Elena. Trust, I have a couple of stories that it freaked me out. So, first story, real quick, before we take off. I was standing on duty, and the whole building was dark. So I turned on all the lights to make sure all the doors were secured. I went down this long hallway, turned on the lights, checked all the doors, and then I turned off the lights and made my way back to the front of the building down the long hallway. I turned off the lights. I went upstairs to check all the doors. And then when I came back downstairs, the lights were turned back on. Nobody was in the building but me.
So, no, that's interesting, but that doesn't prove anything.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. Okay, go ahead. What's the second story, Danny?
The second story was there was a door that doesn't lock. So I tried it from the inside to try to lock it. It didn't lock. So I had to go somewhere real quick. I had to go do something, and then right after I got finished doing what I had to do, I went from the outside to lock it, and the door was locked. I could have sworn, like, no kidding, like 5 minutes ago, that door would not lock from the inside. But when I went from the outside, it felt like somebody was pulling the door, and I was pulling it as hard as I could to open the door, and it would not open. It felt like somebody was holding the door from the other side. But there was nobody in the building. No one.
Somebody was holding the door.
I'll tell you what, Hawaii is a creepy state. I ain't gonna lie to you. It's creepy.
Interesting.
What about the ghost?
I'm about to take off. So,
the ghost.
I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Arizona.
Come haunt us soon.
Danny's coming back, man. There it is.
He's going to be holding our doors.
Danny's taken off now. He's gone. There it is. But Mike, what about the ghosts on the ship?
What ghosts on the ship?
All the sailors that are entombed on the USS Arizona.
I don't know what you're talking about.
On the USS Arizona, out in Hawaii, in Honolulu. Ship, the USS Arizona.
The one that went down in the 40s?
The one that got bombed on the day of Pearl Harbor. The ship with all the sailors on board.
Wow.
The ship is still there with the bodies intact.
With the bodies intact?
Bodies are entombed inside the ship.
Wow, you'd have to ask Danny. I didn't go visit any of that stuff. I didn't want to see it. We're at Pearl Harbor still. I don't want to see any of that. Celebrations of War.
I'm saying, but isn't there ghosts there? I mean,
I don't know. Danny's off the phone. I don't know.
I'm asking you, dude. Do you think there's ghosts?
I don't know.
I've been there. I didn't see.
Did you see the ghosts? Did you feel them? No, Elena says it's in your mind.
Now that you bring that up, maybe there were ghosts there. I didn't see them.
What'd you say, Elena?
I mean, if you want to see him, you can.
How do you see them, Elena?
If you're looking for it, or in your mind, not visually, physically, but if you're looking for it in your mind, you will see what you want. You think that's there. Or you want to be there.
Is that what you tell your boyfriends when they try to look through your phone?
So, you don't believe in ghosts then, Elena?
They've been following you. I can't trust anybody. But I gotta talk to somebody. I gotta talk to somebody. I'm gonna fly. I don't know who they are or what they are, but they're gonna get me, and I'm scared, Jake. I'm so scared, I can't do anything.
Wow.
I don't know who they are or what they are, but they're gonna get me, and I'm scared, Jake. I don't know who they are or what they are, but they're gonna get me, and I'm scared, Jake.
Wow.
I'm so scared, I can't do anything. I can't go to my sister's. I can't even... I can't even go home. I don't know what to do. Oh, shit. All I know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
Yeah, you know, Danny keeps writing me that the door was locked. He couldn't get it open.
I believe it.
That's what he keeps writing me. He must have sent me that same text like 5 times. The door was
locked. You know, something weird happened to me the other night. I'm sitting at home.
Oh, no, stop.
And I was watching. I was arguing with someone.
You're arguing with someone?
I was arguing with someone.
Well, you're arguing.
It doesn't matter. I'm arguing with, well, not arguing, but, you know, having a heated debate with somebody. And
what are you talking about? Having a heated debate with who? What's that, man? What are you talking about?
Can I finish my story?
No, I want to know who you're arguing with. There's nobody left, Mike.
Chris is jealous because it wasn't him.
I was arguing with a ghost, all right?
There's nobody left, man. Who are you arguing with, Byron?
Why weren't you arguing with me?
Elena? Nobody left. All right, go ahead.
Well, anyway, so I'm arguing, and at one point, out of nowhere, I hear a sound. A voice go,
me, me, me!
Just like that. And I was like, what the heck was that? And the other person was like, I don't know. And then we continued our conversation. And then a few minutes later, I was like, okay, what was that? Like, there was nothing it could have been. There was no phone. There was no,
did they hear no the music. Voice?
They heard it, too. It interrupted us. So, I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. This was, like, a few days ago.
Know what that was?
No, I don't.
It was a ghost. You know? I don't know who you're arguing with, man, but don't do it anymore. It's too late, man. Danny's taking off on a plane, man. Taking the red eye back. Go pick him up at the airport.
Now, you know, you just gave me a scary idea. Like, what if you're like, what if there's somebody you're arguing with, or it's like a friend or a girlfriend or something, and you argue with them, and little did you know that they have, like, you know, they're possessed or something, you know, and even they don't know. And then you end up pissing them off. And there it is.
What do you mean they're possessed?
And well, I don't know. I'm just, you know, the story's developing in my mind.
What, the alien? I'm going
to give away my whole concept here.
Julia Stiles or something?
I don't know. Julia Stiles is, you know.
She's pregnant, man.
Is she?
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, she's like, I use that born money, raise my child. They put her in the last Bourne movie. They're like, oh, I have no use being here, but hello.
Oh, man, that last movie was just, I don't even know what that last movie was.
Yeah, exactly.
you know.
All right, Elena, you have an underwear story, and I have a tan in a bottle story.
All right, you can read yours first.
Okay, Elena. You seem to think this is some story that needs to be read.
I didn't say that. I just thought it was interesting.
Okay, let's see how interesting it is, Elena.
All right.
You know, well, actually, my question is, do you think that Matt Damon has had a better career now than Ben Affleck? That was. Because remember, there was a time when we were saying, look what happened to Ben Affleck, and then Ben Affleck came back.
Well, he came back, but what's interesting about Ben Affleck is that he...
Batman.
You know, well, you know, he's got that going, and he had a couple of hits, and he, you know, did the Argo, did really well for him, but
yeah. That was a great movie.
And I think he sees himself as a Clint Eastwood, you know, where he's gonna do different genres and put himself in it
all the way to the end.
And you know, Live by Night did not work, and after Live by Night did not work, and that other film he did, The Accountant, that he didn't direct but he was in. Only kind of halfway worked.
I like The Accountant.
I'm just saying.
Right. No, I understand your point.
In terms of success at the box office and whatnot. And then he was gung-ho. He was going to direct the solo Batman movie, but then he backed down. And mm-hmm. Which I think was a smart move, you know, to say, okay, let me just, you know, let someone else take on all that. You know, Batman movie is like a big deal. You know, it's, you know, you're helping...
I don't think so much of the new Jason Bourne. So what do you think? You think Matt Damon now is starting to peter?
No, I think Matt Damon is, you know, Matt Damon. I think he's got a career, you know, he can do whatever he wants for the rest of his career. It doesn't matter. You know, unless he makes a string of bombs, he'll be fine. And you can even make a string of bombs and still take a comeback. I mean, that's happened a ton of times.
I thought
he
was good in The Martian. The reason why I do that, I just watched The Adjustment Bureau again the other night.
I like The Adjustment Bureau.
I really like The Adjustment Bureau. It was one of your picks in 2011. It was one of the best films.
Yes, it was.
Source Code and Adjustment Bureau. But, you know, I just, I'm not sure if, because he just did another film that didn't do that well.
The Wall, The Great Wall.
The Great Wall, that's what it was. And then somebody else just did a film.
Well, you know, The Great Wall, the problem with The Great Wall and Matt Damon and The Great Wall was that you just don't buy him as this badass. Like, it's just Matt Damon, you know? He just doesn't, I just don't buy him. Mm-hmm. You know, and
I don't think anyone was his fault though. I mean, Wall was just kind of like all over the place, and it was.
I thought the Great Wall was okay. You know, and I thought it was beautiful.
It was entertaining.
Shot and everything, and you know, it really wasn't a bad movie at all. I thought he was probably the weakest element because it really needed to rest on his shoulders, and I don't think he pulled it off. That's just my opinion.
Well, his accent changed like with almost every scene.
The problem is like the Fast and the Furious, the latest one, whatever the fastest and the tastiest, whatever that last one is, that thing's done $1 billion. I mean, how do you do it anymore, Mike? How can you even, you know, review these films? Because and how do you even? You know what I'm saying?
No, is that a rhetorical question?
No, it's just, I'm seriously, man. It's like, because I watch these films and I'm like, yeah, they're good, but like, I mean, what are they? I mean, they're just, but they aren't. They're not. Fascinating. You know what I'm saying? Like the new Beauty, like the new Wonder Woman. How is that?
It's good. It's good. It's not great, but it's good.
That's done $600 million.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. It's good. It's a good movie. It's a good Wonder Woman. You know, they got it right.
You know what they did at Tanglewood yesterday? I didn't go, but you know what they did at Tanglewood?
I have no idea what they did at Tanglewood.
The Boston Pops came, and they did the score to Jaws.
That's fantastic. I would have gone
to the film.
How could you not go to that?
Because I couldn't, but I would have, but I couldn't. But I did, that's what they did. They did the score to Jaws, live to the film.
don't know how that worked out, but somehow.
Oh, no, I've seen it. I've gone to see a few films that way. It's fantastic. Whatever you think it could be, it's so much better. That's all, yeah. I got to tell you. Oh, it's fantastic. I highly recommend. See, any favorite movie like that where they play the score? Like, I went to see a couple of Lord of the Rings that way. It was mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Yeah. Oh, please.
What do they take? They have a different mix.
Well, they have a live orchestra doing it to the film. And they have some subtitles in the film because you can hear it, but, you know, because the music's kind of taken over, they make sure you know, you can't, because the music's a little overpowering. But it's fantastic. When you get hearing it, there's nothing like a live orchestra. It's just
no,
really,
I would have gone. I found out too late. I found out like 2 hours before the thing, and we had all these other commitments. Or else I would have went. They were like, oh, Jaws is playing. I was like, when's that? I mean, I'm a big Jaws fan. You know that.
Well, I would dare say you missed out.
But listen, dude, you recommended, you know, The Assignment, and I don't know about that.
I've never even seen The Assignment. Oh, Reassign. Oh, you mean the one with Jennifer, what's her name? Michelle Rodriguez. Huh? Michelle Rodriguez, right, yes.
Directed by Walter Hill.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's right. I didn't know what the heck you were talking about when you were texting me about
it. Yes, that's what I was saying. I was saying that music seemed somewhat of the 80s, and the film seemed something of the
80s. Oh, yeah, he was definitely going for that. That was his, obviously what he was going for.
Yeah, that was what he was going
for. Yeah.
But, I mean, I think her performance was good, and Sigourney Weaver was interesting.
Sigourney Weaver was definitely interesting.
But the pace of the film, I thought, could have been edited better. But, you know.
Well, it was, no, it is Walter Hill, it's what you'd call a solid B movie. I mean, it really didn't try to be too much more than that, a B movie. Yes,
but
I agree. It was a workmanlike.
You said that he was working on the script 20 years ago and had the film come out 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been mind-blowing.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree with you.
Wow.
He looks good at National 1.
BCS arm switch is on.
Okay, Victor.
Landing rocket arm switch is on. Here comes the throttle. Circuit breaker's in.
We have separation.
Roger.
Inboard and outboard are on. We're coming forward with the side stick.
Oh, looks good.
Roger. I've got a blowout. Damper 3.
Get your pitch to 0.
Pitch is out. I can't hold altitude.
Correction. Alpha hold is on. Trip selected. Emergency.
What's the phone number here, Elena? Do you know?
Oh, play the whole thing, man. That's brilliant.
347-335-4818.
All right. I don't know what number you're reading. It's 347-335-0818. Lady,
oh,
you know,
I can't
you're giving
see.
Out other people's numbers. All right. 347-335.
Well, call those people, too. Maybe they'll play.
347-335-0818 if you want to give a call.
I can't see that far.
You can tell us. Elena's going to keep talking over the number. 347-335-0818. That's 347-335-0818. You can call Night Shift. We've got a little bit over about 16 minutes left of the show.
Did you receive the special note from Tom from the Bronx? Did he send you that special note he was going
to
send you?
I'll have to check the mail.
This Tom from the Bronx loves you.
I love all the music from the $6 Million Man.
I love the $6 Million Man.
Are you a big Lee Majors fan?
Oh, my God. Ever since Big Valley, I'm so hot.
Big Valley, wow. With Richard Long from The Ghost of Mrs. Mira.
Yeah. I just like the way they were.
Did you get my note about that?
Leather.
You know about who?
Oh my God!
Phil, the director for Rocky.
John Avildsen.
Yeah, John Avildsen.
Yeah, I'd heard.
And the Karate Kid.
another great director passing away. Yes.
I never saw any of the Karate Kid movies.
No,
I never saw any of them.
Really?
I didn't see the new one either.
You didn't even see the first one?
Macchio,
Ralph,
man.
Macchio,
like, inspirational Ralph Macchio was, man.
Oh, please. Like, I'm thinking that you all, you know, look like
I've seen that movie like 20 times.
It so did not interest me, even in the least. So, no, I never saw them.
You never saw it. You know, one sock on, one sock off.
I heard those stupidity has become part of pop culture for a while. But no.
It's not stupidity.
Okay.
You never understood.
Wax on, mind. Wax off. I mean, come on.
Rub one on, rub one off.
They didn't. That was one of the.
Yes, they did. They said rub one on, rub one off.
No, they didn't. They said wax on, wax off.
No, rub one off. Rub your head. Rub my feet.
You're talking about the head, porn rub version.
Rub one out.
You're talking about the porn version of Karate Kid.
Now, rub
one off. Whatever, you're just...
Rub my...
I think it's a different kid.
Rub my head.
You're defaming the whole legacy. It's wax on, wax off.
Oh.
Someone call in. Let me give you the wrong number. 347-335-0818.
So, if you go to the place and you get waxing, right? Wax it.
Well, I'm sure you do. I've seen your back.
That's a point. No, that's you know what I'm saying, Mom?
I'm out of this.
Like, what? Like, you never tried to wax one on, wax one off?
I never saw those movies.
Oh, that doesn't disqualify you from what did you just ask?
Do you want to know about the tan in a bottle?
Yes, I want to know about the tan
in a bottle. A new kind of tan in a bottle may one day protect against skin cancer. Okay? It says a method that gives mice a tan without using ultraviolet radiation now in the works. On human skin samples. It's an early step in developing a lotion or cream that might provide fair-skinned folk with protection against skin cancer. Well, if Byron were here, we could say something else. As reported on June 13th in Cell Reports, a topical drug penetrated and tanned laboratory samples of live human skin absent the sun. Unlike self-tanning lotions that essentially stain skin brown and provide minimal sun protection, the drug activates the production of the dark form of the skin pigment melanin, which absorbs UV radiation and diminishes damage to skin cells. The team behind the study has worked with a different drug, the plant extract forskolin. In a 2006 study, the researchers used mice with skin like that of red-haired, fair-skinned people who don't tan because of non-functioning protein on the surfaces of their skin cells that make melanin. Applying forskolin with these mice stimulated the production of the dark form of melanin. When exposed to UV rays, the mice with dark pigment had less DNA damage and sunburn, as well as fewer skin tumors compared with the untreated mice. White people can now look black without having to deal with any of the downsides.
All we've ever wanted.
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say
that. Wait.
It didn't say that.
Wait a second.
It didn't say that.
It doesn't say that. White people trying to look black. It does not say
that. It doesn't say that. No, I'm going to read you what it says.
It doesn't say white people
want to look black. We're wrong to be black.
It doesn't say that. It says here, there was an obvious interest in asking, could this be applied to human skin? Said David Fisher, a cancer biologist at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. But the human epidermis, the outermost layer of the skin, is about 5 times thicker in humans than in mice, which means that many drugs simply can't get in. Sure enough, this was true for forskolin. So Fisher and colleague looked at another way to activate pigmentation, focusing on a different enzyme, the one that forskolin had targeted. Another research group had shown that an enzyme called salt-inducible kinase inhibits melanin production in mice and animals lacking the gene for this enzyme developed darkened fur. This provided the opportunity to try to target that inhibitor, block it, and thereby stimulate pigmentation with a drug, Fisher said. The researchers tinkered with the structures of the drugs to make them able to penetrate human skin while retaining their enzyme-blocking ability. In liquid form applied to the skin, the best drug deeply tanned the human skin sample right after 8 days with one treatment a day. Experiments on mice showed similar results. Then the tan faded after the treatment ended. So there it is. What do you think?
Pretty good, man. That sounds like you've got a...
That sounds like life is like science fiction.
What's this stuff called? It's called wax on, wax off.
Exactly. Wax on, wax off.
There it is. Black on, black off.
Black on, black off.
Yeah,
after 8 days. That's what it's called. After 8 days, black, you'd wake
get
up
black in 8 days.
Be black.
And when you don't want to be black anymore, be it black. Fades away.
That's right. Be black or just look like one.
I'm tired of being black. Let it fade.
Exactly. Oh, this was fun. Let's go back to being white.
I know. I got in all the clubs I wanted to. Now I'm done. Exactly. I need a new fad.
And like, in my new book, I was black for a summer.
You know what? That's a great title.
There it is. It's a remake of the Gregory Peck film. Well, you've been listening to Night Shift here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with Elena Fulgham.
Hello.
Chris Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT, Night Shift.
Yes, please like us.
Mondays.
White or black, midnight, we're there for you.
Till 3 a.m. You too can be black. In just 8 days.
And then back to white again.
Whenever you're ready.
It's like fast food black.
That's right. Wax on, wax on.
And here's the interesting part, though. They said that because the interesting development of it is a potentially useful product, they said that the skin may be actually, how useful the drug may be depends on how well it actually lowers skin cancer risk and whether it's easy for people to use.
You know, I've always had that question.
I think that, you know, behind, like, you find the guy doing the research behind it is like a vampire. It's like the Dracul.
No, what? Yeah, Dracul.
Dracul. I wanted worse, to look human again.
The 50 number of tanning block? What's worse, the tanning block or the sun?
I have no idea anything about...
Because you put the tanning block on you.
I know
you,
nothing
about
these tanning
the sun,
blocks.
Baking into your skin. You got this chemical on you. It's
Elena, what do you use? Do you use any kind of tanning blocker?
I use like 45.
Right, but what's worse for you? The tanning blocker or just, you know, getting a little bit of sun and then putting some, you know, putting on a shirt or a t-shirt,
I mean,
or something.
I put
on some baby oil and go out and stroke.
No, I use like aloe vera. I mean, you know, as you get older, I mean, Chris, I don't know if this happens to you, but as you get older, like he doesn't get older.
He's stopped.
I know. He is the ultimate vampire.
No, I just don't know. I mean, I use 50 block when I'm out. I just put it on there, but I just don't know what's worse. That chemical baking into my skin.
He does not use 50 block. He just puts it on his beak.
No, I use 50 block. I do.
There's
you don't use 50
wrong
block.
With it. I don't
even.
Yeah, I use like 50. I mean, the number really doesn't matter. I mean, that's been proven.
The number really doesn't matter. Really?
Chemical you're using, some kind of chemical that you're out in the sun. It's baking into your skin or blocking into your skin.
It's like when you buy a toothpaste, extra whitening power. It's all the same thing. You still brush your teeth
Elena, the the skeptical consumer. It's all the same thing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That's why people.
No, but my point is that doesn't it make more sense?
Because they're obsessed
to go out in the sun for like 15 minutes, you know, and then put a shirt on. That's my point. Rather than use sunblock.
But does it matter? I mean, like, I could just be walking, you know, 20 blocks to get somewhere instead of taking the subway, and then the next thing I know, I'm like, I look like a tomato.
Oh, really? 20 blocks to look at tomato?
That's what they called her back in the 40s.
Well, Elena, if you wore the 50 block, you wouldn't have that problem. That's the difference between 20 block and a 50 block.
I don't think so, but all right. I mean, again, I mean, the number really doesn't matter. If you have block on, you have block on. Then when you get home...
Block on or block off?
Block on, block off. Or black off. Yeah. Black on, black off.
That's right. That's right, you can be black and say. Black on, black off.
Let me ask you, Elena. Elena, were you around for the thunderstorm that happened?
Yes.
The big thunderstorm?
Yeah, I got caught in it.
Where were you?
I'm sorry?
Where were you during the big thunderstorm?
I was in Little Italy.
Yeah, she was, and what happened? Was it biblical?
I guess so, but when by the time I got home, like around, what, I don't know, 7 or 8 o'clock, yeah, the sky was the most beautiful color I've ever seen. So, yeah, it was tremendous. And I don't use umbrellas because I don't know how to operate them. And so, you know, I just came home and I was just like, well, this is the way it is, so... It was pretty traumatic, but it was fine. We all survived. Knock on wood.
This is Elena out of the storm.
I survived the storm.
All right. Well, you have been listening to Night Shift, and we're on every Monday from midnight to 3 a.m. I'm Mike Sargent, and Chris Taylor's on the phone. Lena's here in the studio, and you can follow us on Facebook. We also have, you can follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ on Twitter. And I'm sorry, there are a couple people who called, and I didn't take them.
Yeah, give us your confetti.
Money Penny.
Twitter.
Money Penny. Chris?
Yes.
Joe wants to do a live show at a club. That's his next move.
Oh, no. Is it going to be scary?
Oh, yeah?
Well, no.
What kind of club?
Like a restaurant, bar restaurant. We do the show live, like a Vegas thing. You know, pass the mic around, ask some questions. You know, have a psychic or something. So that's his next move. So we're supposed to be doing something like that soon.
Yay! Oh.
Yes, that's coming.
Oh, that sounds
interesting. Well, then I'll have to shave. I don't know.
Well, you know, Elena, there are worse things.
No, you've never shaved me, so you don't know.
Until next week.
Until next week.
You're more than welcome to.
When Mike will find out what Confifi means.
And I'll wear sunblock.
And Elena will learn to pronounce Confifi.
Confifi. I like that word actually now. Confifi.
Try it.
Kind of turns me on if you just keep repeating it over and over and over.